Five Things First Thing with JR Morning's Chris Renwick, Lloyd Jackson, and Jamie Edmonds.
6:05 on a very snowy, treacherous morning.
Wow.
This music feels very apropos. That's how I felt trying to dodge the piles of snow on 696 in the Lodge. We are here and all accounted for. Lloyd Jackson, Jamie Edmonds, you just make sure you give yourself a little extra
time
this
morning. You got to do
it. That's really it.
And I actually took Woodward down instead of the lot. Usually I get on the Lodge.
Yeah.
And I took Woodward down. And, Woodward went to, it's still slushy. It depends on where you are. You know, if you're in Oakland County, a little better than if you cross the bridge and you're into Wayne County. And Highland Park was pretty good. I was surprised. Highland Park was just wet. And then when you got closer down to the Fisher Building, it was just wet on Woodward. So they're out there.
Yeah, it's like raining on top of snow. It's interesting.
It's that packing
and then it's
going
to get a little colder this morning.
Behind it, yes.
Yeah, so later on this morning, it's going to get a little cold. So, the afternoon commuters, be careful as well.
Yes.
It's going to be treacherous conditions all day. So just make sure you buy yourself a little extra time. Lots of school closings today, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
My kids' schools got called pretty early last night.
Yeah, schools were called last night.
Yeah. I don't know if schools are being – are they a little more liberal with that nowadays?
I think they are, man, because, when I was a kid, man, the snow would be up to your bottom lip.
And they're like, I'll figure it out.
Hey, mom, slap some Vaseline on your face and
bring
push
your
out the
shovel
door.
With you to tunnel through.
That's it.
So lots of kids are home today, too, so –
I've done stories in local news life about how they make these decisions. They have to decide this like the night before, maybe 3 a.m. They look at all these factors. Is it going to be safe for the kids on the bus? And I don't envy them.
No, I agree. It's a lot.
It's tedious.
It's a lot. And really depending on where you live, right? Because if you're in an area where there's like lots of subdivisions, they don't worry so much about the plows getting through and the buses be able to get through. But if you live in a little more rural area, it's more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. I don't envy those those decisions that are made. Meanwhile, Donald Trump yesterday kind of got back to the trail. He held the rally in the Poconos where he talked a lot about the economy and affordability, which he called a few days ago a Democratic hoax, which is certainly not a Democratic hoax. He won on affordability.
Mm-hmm.
He won on immigration. He won on saying this last administration didn't do a good enough job. Your dollar isn't going as far. Here's what I'm going to do to fix
it.
Day
one,
he was going to lower
everything.
Yeah.
And so I think the switch from talking a lot of immigration to switching to talking about affordability means that they're listening to the American people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he talked about is the cost of energy, right? He is drill, baby, drill. Right. There were signs on the campaign trail, people holding up drill, baby, drill behind him at every stop he went to. Well, he talked about that they are drilling more oil.
Right now, drilling more oil than we've ever done ever before. Prices are way down. We just had 4 states. It was just reported that 4 states had $1.99 a gallon.
Not here.
No,
I've not seen that here in the Metro Detroit area.
No, and, he talked about inflation, do you have a bite for inflation? I don't think so. No. Being fine, everything's going down, but it's still at 3%, which is above the Fed Reserve's target of 2%. And if you look at the Wall Street Journal here, at 3%, prices will double in 24 years. Just think about that. If it stays at 2%, it's 36 years. So there are people there that can feel the difference in those percentage point.
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, it was at 2%, right? Before inflation spiked. It was right around 2%, 2.5%.
Mm-hmm.
It's a comfortable number to be at. When it got up, I mean, that's exactly right. And I think there are a number of economists, and we can ask Patrick Anderson coming up at 6:19. Is it possible to get back down to 2%? Or is 3% the new normal? Like, is that where we just should be expecting to live at this point? Because getting it back down that far is difficult.
Yeah.
It has proven difficult, at least over the last couple of years.
Well, we can certainly ask Patrick Anderson that question, but that's the target of the Fed, and we're just not getting there. But these claims that inflation is down is not true.
Meanwhile, you got the Federal Reserve meeting today.
Yeah.
And they're
going
to decide whether or not they're going to lower interest rates again.
Mm-hmm. What's your thought on that?
My thought, this one feels a little more... you know, these experts are a little more divided on this.
Yeah.
Feels like they're maybe leaning more towards another 0.25%, but it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
It's hard
to
tell.
This one is. The last one I don't think was so hard to predict.
But again, like these jobs numbers have been so up and down.
Well, they don't have all the data.
All the data, yeah.
And then they don't have all the data. So that's interesting, too.
Wayne County Prosecutor Kim Worthy, she is blasting a judge's decision to throw out a murder and child abuse charges in the death of a 9-month-old girl, calling the dismissal outrageous and vowing to appeal. Judge Cynthia Miller dismissed the case Monday after learning that Detroit police body camera footage had not been turned over to the defense in the trial of Charles Evans, accused of killing his infant daughter, Kinsley. Well, Evans's attorney argued the missing videos denied him a fair trial, but Worthy says there was no discovery violation and accuses the judge of showing bias, noting Miller was previously represented by the same law office as Evans's attorney. Miller has not commented on that claim. The child's family says the dismissal robbed them of justice, calling Kinsley's death a homicide that deserves a full trial. Prosecutors say the judge's conduct and legal reasoning will be challenged as they move quickly to appeal the ruling. You know, Kim Worthy is pretty quiet most of the time. She just, you know, she'll make a charge, and she'll bring a charge because she knows she can convict. She won't bring a charge if she doesn't think she can convict. And, you know, for her to be upset about this and to really come out and put out press releases and say it's got to be, you know, something pretty bad, because Kim is pretty quiet on these things, you know, normally.
Kwame's in the news.
Yes, he is. He is trying to ask a federal judge, or he has asked a federal judge, to wipe out about $830,000 in restitution he owes taxpayers from his 2013 public corruption conviction. In the court filing yesterday, Kilpatrick called the continuing demands for payment a burden and said they threatened his ability to work and support his family. Now, he was released from prison after President Donald Trump commuted his 28-year sentence in 2021, detail a post-prison life of preaching, he's teaching, and caring for his late mother, former Congresswoman Carolyn Cheeks Kilpatrick. He claims he has matured and become a responsible father, husband, and pastor. Now, he's going to join us at 7:19 this morning, and, you know, we'll ask him, you know, why does he think this is a burden, and how does he think that this is going to change? He's done this before. He's tried to get the judge
multiple times
to do this, and she's always turned him down, so I don't know what makes this one different. Other than you just trying again, but we'll ask him when he comes on at 7:19.
I printed out the filing. Quote, Kilpatrick makes no excuses for his past actions. In pursuit of transformation, he made exceptional strides in becoming all that he was born to be.
Okay. Well, we'll see.
There's more in the filing that we can get into.
Well, and again, we'll talk to him.
Yeah, we'll ask him.
Interested to hear his perspective on this. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll take a break. Patrick Anderson joins us on the other side. Donald Trump's meeting on affordability, what the Federal Reserve might do today. It's next on JR Morning.
Interested in the ultimate European vacation for 2026? Then get ready to savor Southern Italy and indulge in its bold flavors, vintage wines, and timeless beauty. With me, Jamie Edmonds, for this unparalleled experience, October 10th through the 15th, as we take a journey of the senses through Puglia and private tours of the ancient towns of Matera and Alberobello. We'll behold the iconic stone Trulli houses and so much more. With acclaimed chef Michelle Bomarito and John Filone, co-owner of Cantoro Italian Market and Trattoria, we'll enjoy authentic local dishes, wine tasting, pasta making, and breathtaking legendary landmarks. But space is limited. Join Ryan and me, my husband, for our 10-year anniversary next October. Who wouldn't want to come with us? Visit exceptionaljourneys.net or call 1-855-305-8982. That's 1-855-305-8982. Italy awaits us.
Five Things First Thing with JR Morning on 760 WJR.
Welcome back to JR Morning. We're talking affordability, and we're talking the Fed on if they are going to cut interest rates later on today for the third time this year. Let's bring in Patrick Anderson, founder and CEO of Anderson Economic Group. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning to you.
Do you think they will drop for the third time this year, a quarter point?
I do think that that they'll drop the rates. I think it's going to be a very contentious meeting, and even a quarter point rate drop doesn't affect the economy that much, but it's a signal that this is important. It's also, I mean, we're looking at the end of the Jerome Powell regime coming up. The president's going to announce a potential successor. A longtime critic is now sitting next to him on the board, Stephen Miron. And it's going to be a contentious meeting. So I don't expect this to be one of the well-choreographed, we did almost nothing but papered over the file extensively kind of meeting.
Patrick, if we assume the Fed takes action today, what's the next piece of economic data, be it inflation or employment or something else, maybe entirely, you know, different that you think that Chairman Powell is going to be watching most nervously over the next 3 weeks, 3 months, rather?
A lot of us are looking for the jobs data and income data, some of which was delayed by the shutdown. And you saw our company, Anderson Economic Group, went out and tried to estimate unemployment and other things when the federal government was shut down. And generally wasn't a really pretty picture because the government shutdown hurt jobs and didn't save the taxpayers any money. It wasn't a good episode for us. So there'll be after effects of that. And generally, a lot of economists have been pointing out that the economy has been weaker and has been weaker for some time, going over a year, than you might think if you just looked at the stock market or just looked at information technology.
So the last jobs report was a good one, beat expectations, but hiring still remains a bit uncertain at this point. What's the pro-con to lowering the interest rate by a quarter of a percent again?
Obviously, the argument for lowering it is that the economy is a little bit weaker and that the jobs haven't been as strong. And as I pointed out before, a lot of the reported jobs, a million reported jobs from the last year of the Biden administration, didn't actually exist. And had to have to be ironed out of the data now. So you start looking at those things and all of a sudden the economy doesn't look that good. That's the reason to reduce rates. The reason to hold strong is that inflation has also not gone away. And the effect of tariffs is going to affect prices. And people are concerned about that as well.
We're talking a lot about affordability these days and the president in Pennsylvania talking about it as well. What numbers stick out to you? I mean, I'm just looking at this Wall Street Journal article. Shelter costs are up 3.6%. Home insurance premiums are up 8%. Electricity up 11%. What sticks out to you?
In that mix, energy prices going up, and they've been going up significantly, and residential electric prices. Some of this is due to economic policy, including the policies among many states, including Michigan, to push for less reliable, more expensive renewable energy, shut down what had been very inexpensive, totally amortized energy plants. There's lots of reasons to do that, and I'm not saying we shouldn't have done it. There's environmental reasons and others, but it does have the effect of requiring us to pay more for energy. Housing prices are sensitive, and that's another one where inflation has hurt us. And food, I'm really looking at. Actually, I got three charts up here, and you can just see food and clothes, particularly people that are on, I want to say, modest incomes in cities. These prices are hurting them. And one of the signal failures of the last administration was to fail to admit that. And this president, who ran, of course, on getting prices lower, among many other things, is extremely sensitive to the fact that prices haven't come down. They continue to go up, although slower than they had in the past.
Patrick, when a president promises lower costs, you know, there are usually some trade-offs. I mean, what's the unpopular truth or the necessary trade-off that President Trump didn't mention on stage last night, but that you as an economist know has to accompany any truly successful push for greater affordability?
Well, you have to stop promising that you're going to do things for free. I think that was a really big problem under the Biden administration. And you're seeing that. One positive thing here is in the auto industry, where the actions of this administration have been to eliminate the penalties for CAFE. They're starting to remove the electric vehicle mandate that was put into the EPA's greenhouse gas rule, these are significant savings per car, at least $1,000 a car in many respects, the cars that wouldn't even be built. So that's, I'm not sure, entirely unpleasant, because cars are still cleaner and safer than they were in the past. So we're still going to make progress on both safety and emissions. Then our signature industry here, this is a big affordability improvement and a job improvement. So on that one, I know you asked for an unpleasant truth, but the biggest single policy change here has been very positive for our industry and for our consumers.
Well, you coming up with a pleasant truth. Patrick Anderson, thank you so much.
All right. Good to talk with you this morning.
All right. So that's good news for cars. You know, my parents have an all electric house and my dad's bills are just like through the roof right now.
Right.
So people are feeling it. Absolutely. All right. More to come here on JR Morning. What are we going to talk about next, Chris?
How about this Gang of Eight meeting that's going to be taking place?
Let's do that. That's important next. 6:35.
Well, the Gang of Eight met yesterday to try to get to the bottom of the second boat strike on that drug runner boat, the alleged drug runner boat, back on September 2nd. And this has now become a bipartisan effort. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer allegedly told Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary, that they have studied the video long enough and that Congress deserves full access to the raw video. But Hegseth says, well, there's more. They need more time to look at this video. And it becomes more complicated because these efforts in the Caribbean are still ongoing. So that this is still an active campaign when you start releasing this video, it might compromise some of their plans. Problem with that logic a little bit is they've already released lots of video on these boats.
All over social media.
Yeah.
So they feel like there isn't enough there. Congress has also inserted a provision into the defense policy bill that would withhold 25% of Pete Hegseth's travel funds unless he releases the footage. So this it's not just Democrats anymore. There are Republicans that are hopping on board with this too.
There are different accounts of lawmakers who have seen the video. Tom Cotton saying, they were about to flip the boat over and go do more bad things. Other people are saying there were two people on a floating shipwreck raising their hands saying, like, we need help when they were targeted. So, I mean, release it so everyone can see it and make their own decision.
I was wondering, too, about Admiral Alvin Hosey, the commander who basically resigned. You know, he oversees the operations in Latin America. He resigned, and it makes me think what kind of internal issues are going on in the Pentagon as well with this situation.
Well, what do you think?
I think that, you know, the admiral didn't think this was legal and decided he didn't want to, you know, carry it out, and I believe he may have been asked to step down.
Okay. Yeah, I think that, you know, if you feel like everything was done on the up and up, release the video. Period. To me, the optics of you not releasing the video feels like you're hiding something.
Yeah.
They don't need to release it to me.
No, of course not.
Exactly. Of course not.
But you can talk to Congress
about
it. Absolutely,
yes. Tell them who was on the boat, why you targeted them, and all of that.
Well, and then it might contradict the reports that, well, these two guys were potentially trying to get in contact with another boat
with the
in the area.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or that they were going to continue to carry out this run. If that's the case, then you carry out the second strike. Wouldn't necessarily be illegal because it's part of the operation. Release the video to Congress. Like, this is where I think the distrust amongst every institution at this point. This isn't a partisan issue. This is both sides of the aisle.
Absolutely.
Everybody wants to keep things on the down low. Everybody wants to keep things nice, hush and hush. When in reality, people just want you to be transparent. And very rarely do we find the desire for transparency among these lawmakers or secretaries, for that matter.
Well, I know the president had said that he would be in favor of releasing it. And then when someone questioned him about it, I believe it was yesterday, the day before, he said, I didn't say that.
Well, then he said, no, because what he said was, well, I'll leave it up to Pete Hegseth. If Pete Hegseth wants to release it, I'm on board. If he doesn't, I'm on board.
What he said was like a week ago, I'll release it, no problem. And then someone from ABC News said, sir, you said you would release the video. And he said, I didn't say that.
Yeah.
You're fake news, ABC.
You're right.
That's exactly what happened.
Yes.
So what do you want him to do then? Like, release the video. That's what Congress should be clamoring for.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what they are clamoring for.
Release
the
video.
That's why there's a provision in the defense spending bill to try and force the issue.
Is that going to be enough?
I don't know.
At this point, it's very tough. How about this story? Nearly one third of U.S. teens are using AI chatbots daily. 48% of that one third are using them several times a week or even more often. That's according to a new survey from Pew Research. And the most frequented chatbot platform is ChatGPT. Hmm. So already, you've got the young, impressionable, moldable minds just.
Yeah.
What are you doing today? I had to go to school. It was cold. Like, what are we doing here?
Well, if they're using ChatGPT, they may be asking pertinent questions to their life. They're not like talking to a robot.
Or getting that research paper done.
Well, that's what the chatbots are a little different than the AI platform.
Yeah.
That's like the companion thing, right? That's like the conversation.
Related, in Australia, today is the first day that Australian teens have no access to their social media accounts. It's a world first ban. Obviously, we know what it's designed to try and protect kids from these addictive algorithms and things. Will it work? I mean, who knows? The 10 banned platforms are Instagram, Facebook, Threads, Snapchat, YouTube, TikTok, Kick, Reddit, Twitch, and X. And all those companies say they'll comply by using age verification for these kids. There's a person in Australia called like an e-safety person saying, we're trying to protect our kids. We're going to do some research starting today to see, does this force kids into a darker portion of the web? Are they going outside more? Are they reading books more? They're going to look into it. And Stanford University is going to help with that research. Kids in Australia aren't happy about it. Some parents are saying, it's not fair. We'll just set up their accounts for them.
Is it a certain age?
16.
16. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have like HBO Max or Disney Plus or anything like that? You guys have those?
I have Max. Yeah.
Okay. So you can set up a kid's account. So you can set up like a kid's profile on your account. And if you go to the kid's profile, it doesn't have the full catalog, the full library of the offerings on these platforms. And so like if I walk away and the kids are on the HBO Max app and they're on, you know, Jacob's page, I know that whatever that's on there is going to be appropriate for that.
Age appropriate, yes.
If they're on my screen, well, they have access to The Sopranos and Game of Thrones and things that you don't need to be seeing.
Right.
Right? It feels like we don't need to take the technology away, but we need to put the governor on it.
Some safeguards.
Like, you need to make sure that they aren't, that some of the algorithm isn't accessible
to
them.
Sure, yeah.
And that, to me, feels like the happy middle ground. Mm-hmm. That you give them access, you give them the ability to stay connected without the nastiness of social media. And maybe you can't avoid it altogether, but at least you can really tamp it down.
It's hard, I think, because according to this article here, so they banned 10 of these social media things in Australia, but then Discord, these other ones, Roblox, Stream, some of these others are not banned. So it's like, can you ban everything?
Yeah.
No. Are you going to rely on these companies to do the right thing and enforce some of these age restrictions? I don't know.
A Manhattan federal judge has granted the release of the grand jury in the Ghislaine Maxwell case. We'll talk to Matthew Schneider on the other side here on JR Morning.
There were just over 3 million units of new vehicle inventory listed for sale in the United States as of October 2025, according to the latest S&P Global Mobility retail advertised inventory data. This marks a small decline of 0.4% compared to October 2024. As expected, EV inventory increased 14% from the prior month as the federal tax credits concluded. There were over 104,000 EVs listed for sale at the end of October. Overall advertised EV discounts increased 6% in October as brands employed different strategies to sell EVs based on their individual business situations. The average discount on new vehicles are also on the rise, increasing $221 to $3,229. End of year discounts are expected to increase as model year 26 inventory continues to arrive and prompts dealers and manufacturers to clear out the older model year 25 units. What's noticeable in this fluid environment is the increased pace of discounts on the newer 2026 vehicles. The average discount on a 2026 vehicle is just over $2,800, and the industry did not reach this level of discounting on 2025 vehicles until early this past spring, meaning we are several months ahead of last year's pace. I'm Kent Chu with this week's Automotive Minute from S&P Global Mobility.
So a federal judge in New York has ruled in favor of the Justice Department's request to release grand jury-related materials to Ghislaine Maxwell's case. And according to the judge, all the procedures have been put in place to protect victims' anonymity and privacy before any of these documents have been made public. This comes just, what, 9 days from now? The Epstein files are supposed to be released. And there was a real question on whether or not the grand jury material was going to provide really any insight into this case anyway. Let's talk about it with Matthew Schneider, former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan, partner at Haunting Law. Matthew, good morning. Good to have you back.
Good morning, Chris. And you're right. The clock is ticking on this. The order has been issued. The Justice Department, the ball's in their court to release this material. We haven't seen it yet, but we're about to within a few days. So we'll find out what's in there.
Well, let's start with this ruling in New York. What do we expect to see out of the grand jury files? Because I remember when this initial push was made, a lot of the legal experts that I had heard, talked to, you and others, like, there just isn't going to be a whole lot here in terms of finding out the broader scope, the bigger picture of what happened here.
That's true. And it's important to note that this order applies not just to the grand jury materials, but to a lot of other items in the case. So if we just look back a little bit in history, back in 2020, the grand jury, they took in evidence and they indicted Ghislaine Maxwell. And then after that, there was a trial and other evidence came out. So now in any prosecution, when a prosecutor brings evidence and brings a courtroom proceeding, you take some of the evidence and you introduce it in front of the jury, and some of it you decide you're not going to use. Well, what this order says is the Justice Department now has to disclose all of the grand jury material, all of the courtroom evidence, and all of the other evidence that you could have used in trial, but you didn't. All of that other stuff that the public has never seen before is also subject to this order. And that's why this is so significant, because we are going to be able to see things that the public has never seen, and that's what's going to be revealing.
I actually have a follow-up to that, that usually these things are permanently sealed by law. Now a congressional act can overrule this grand jury protection. Can't you see this in the future happening again, like on the political spectrum when they want to open up investigations?
It would be pretty rare. This Epstein Act, the Epstein Files Transparency Act that forced the release of this grand jury material, that's so unusual to have happen. It's just only happened a few times in American history where that's taken place. So I don't think it'll be repeated very frequently, but we should also remember that the Justice Department earlier this year, they tried to unseal these files and they went in front of the judge and said, I want to release these files. And the judge said, no. Then Congress passed that law. And only because of that, they're releasing it. So a very unusual circumstance that is unlikely to be repeated.
Matthew, is there a real risk that in the rush to release these documents that victims could be accidentally identified, even with the redactions?
Yes, Lloyd, there is. And that's something we should always be concerned about. In fact, some of the victims have put their voices forward in this case. Some have said, we want these released. Others have said, we have to be very careful with this, because the last time the Justice Department produced some information, it had victim information in there, and we didn't want that. And so the victims are nervous about this. The judge made in the judge's order some requirements for this, and in fact is making the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York personally certify that this does not contain victim information. But, you know, there are ways around that. Mm-hmm. If you, for example, if you know that The name Chris Renwick has so many letters in that name, and a redacted document only redacts that number of letters in a name. You could probably piece it together based on other information that it says Chris Renwick. And people will be doing that in these records to try to see what's behind the redaction, how many letters are in each of these names, and they'll try to be adding them up.
I don't know why I was the example there, but that's okay. We move past it. We have 9 days before the entirety of this material comes out. What do we expect to happen from there on? If this material becomes public, what happens then legally?
Well, I actually have a follow up to that, which is kind of related. If she is serving a 20-year prison term and there are a million victims, why haven't we heard of anyone who has been involved in this, you know, criminally? Where are those names?
Yeah, some of those names are under seal, and we might find out about that information when it actually comes out. So also to Chris's point, I'm not so sure we will find out every single thing in here, because the law does provide that the Justice Department can refuse to turn over information that might be related to an ongoing investigation. And if there is some sort of investigation that is still
Which there are, right? There are a few investigations ongoing.
That's what they're saying. And if that's the case, then they won't release some of this. And then we'll see, this whole thing will start all over again, where the victims will be very upset. The Congress will clamor for it. And people will be mad that all of the information is not turned over. So I think it's going to repeat itself.
You're just looking into the crystal ball. You see how this thing's going to play out. Matthew Schneider, it's why we always talk. Thanks for your time. We'll talk again soon.
Chris, when I look into the crystal ball, I hope I won't see your name in there again.
Never, never. Not even hypothetically, Matthew.
Sounds good.
appreciate it. But yeah, I mean, we're days away from that. Pair that with this judge's decision in New York, and this again, the story isn't going anywhere.
Where are the people who are involved in this? Mm-hmm. That's what people want to know.
That has been my question the whole time.
If we
haven't realized, A, who they are, what they've done, if they've done something bad, nefarious, illegal, wrong, why hasn't anything been done?
Right.
Why hasn't anything been done to these people? Through the multiple investigations, through the years that they've had this information, bupkis.
Yeah.
We've gotten nothing.
Nothing.
So it does feel like it could be anticlimactic, quite frankly. But we wait to see the actual information. All right, we'll take a break. 7 o'clock hour coming up. We will talk to Kwame Kilpatrick. He wants that restitution money gone. That's coming up at 7:19. 7 o'clock hour. It's good to have you this snowy Wednesday morning. A little rainy when I finished the drive coming in.
Yeah.
Snow/rain.
Yeah.
Good packing snow, though.
Good packing snow.
For a snowman.
We'll be making snowmen later. You know, it's funny. Jake was reading. We have a Frosty the Snowman book.
Yeah.
And it's funny watching these kids, and you've seen it with Liv. It's like the development in when they start to realize things and digest things and like can then move it into emotion.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're driving around. Jake's reading this Frosty the Snowman book in the back seat, and all of a sudden he starts to cry. And I'm like, what is wrong? He's like, Frosty's gone. He melted. And he's like, all of his friends are sad. And I'm like, yeah, that's the thing. Frosty goes away and then he comes back. That's the deal. On Christmas Day.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, yeah, but they're all sad. Like, it was like he felt an emotion.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It was. Yeah. It's very interesting to see that on a Frosty the Snowman book.
Yeah.
I think
from the mouths of babes.
Right.
It's just so sweet.
And I believe Frosty is on tonight.
Oh, is it?
On NBC, the cartoon, the one that they show every year. It was showing it when I was a kid, man.
The OG Frosty.
Yes, yes.
Turn that on.
We have every streaming platform. We are knee deep in all of these things. The ones that they don't like are the old claymation ones.
The really old ones.
The real, like the little drummer boy
and Rudolph.
And Rudolph. They're like, mm-mm.
Oh,
not
man.
Not about that.
I like the claymation ones. Kris Kringle and all those. Yeah.
Jake's like, these kind of scare me. I'm like, no. I agree.
They are a little freaky.
I don't disagree. I'm with it.
Right.
So just as you're getting ready for work this morning, getting ready to leave, give yourself a little extra
take some
time because it's going to be a little slippery. Meanwhile, Donald Trump yesterday was in Pennsylvania as part of this affordability tour. He's going around touting the accomplishments in this first year, particularly on the economic front. And he talked a lot about the tariffs and how they're bringing in money to the United States, the fact that they're drilling more oil, and the jobs are coming back, particularly in places like Pennsylvania.
Since my inauguration, we've created nearly 60,000 new Pennsylvania jobs, including 4,000 Pennsylvania manufacturing jobs that the Democrats gave up on.
He is very much in his element.
Very much, yes.
A rally.
Yeah.
He loves
90
that.
Minutes.
The fact that we are seeing the president go on this tour talking about affordability means, I think, that they are starting to hear from the American people that things are too expensive. And the fact that he's rescinding some duties on some agricultural goods means that he's conceding that some of these tariffs are increasing prices.
Sure. And that you have to. Right. Yeah. And actually, do you know how much better it would be for him, in my opinion? Look, I'm no political consultant.
Okay.
But if he comes out and goes, hey, you know what? I'm going to roll some of this back. Thought it was going to work. Hasn't worked. It's causing you a little extra stress, particularly around the holiday season. I'm going to roll some of these back to start recorrecting a little bit.
Hmm.
Well, he's doing it quietly.
Yeah. Well, he is doing it quietly.
Without bananas, coffee.
Without admitting.
But he's not
publicly.
Admitting.
Yeah. Do it publicly.
Yeah.
It makes my heart sore when a politician goes, my bad.
Yeah.
Oops.
But, you know.
I'm gonna redirect this.
Yeah.
We're going to fix this. Thought it was going to work. We tried.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not
and
working.
That's okay if you tried and it didn't work.
Do you know where his approval rating would go? It would go up.
Yeah.
Because at least you can see and you're relating to people. That was what the magic of Donald Trump in these campaigns was, that he uniquely related to people in a way that nobody else did.
And people felt hurt.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a political discussion yesterday talking about when politicians say, I did it, the job's done, the voters really don't like that.
No.
So when President Bush wrote Mission Accomplished,
that
really had a negative effect.
Yes.
And then in this instance, President Trump saying, oh no, things are fine. Everything costs, you know, normal prices. They're not high. People don't like that.
It's the same problem that the Biden administration
had.
The economy's great. The economy's great.
A plus.
Yeah, but the economy has not been great for people who feel it.
No.
I don't care what your numbers say. People are still paying too much for the grocery store, still paying too much for gas. I don't care what your economic numbers say.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reality. That's what people feel. It's Tiger Woods, when he's hitting a shot, he talks about real versus feel. What is he feeling versus what's actually happening?
Yeah.
Same principle here. Whatever your numbers say is different than what people are feeling.
Correct.
Michigan health officials are pushing back against a major shift in national vaccine guidance. The state health department says it strongly disagrees with CDC advisory panel's new recommendations to end decades-long guidance that all newborns receive the hepatitis B vaccine within 24 hours of birth. The panel, now entirely appointed by Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., prominent vaccine skeptic, voted to give the birth dose only to babies whose mothers test positive or whose status is unknown. For all other infants, the decision would be left to parents and doctors, with shots beginning at 2 months. Michigan leaders and national medical groups warned that the change could reverse major public health gains. Universal newborn vaccination in place since 1991 has led to a 95% drop in pediatric hepatitis B cases and prevented millions from infections. MDHHS is urging families to continue following the schedule recommended by the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Academy of Family Physicians, as the CDC's acting director decides whether to adopt the panel's guidance. I think it all boils down to talking to your doctor and talking to your pediatrician to see what's right for your child.
I'd like to talk to a doctor about that on this air.
Yes.
Get into it further. Yeah.
That would be great.
Michigan basketball, we are Michigan State's, you know, the station for that. But they're beating people by 25 points on average for the last six
games.
It's
crazy.
They beat the Villanova Wildcats 89-61.
I mean, they are drubbing people.
They are.
They look really good.
I think Tom Izzo on Monday, when we talked to him, talked about, like, the consistency of teams.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned Michigan as being one of those teams that are just very consistent, right? Learning about these teams that you're playing midway through December, which is about where we're at.
Yeah.
Michigan is one of those teams that he mentioned that is playing just really good. And they are playing really consistent basketball, really good team.
Undefeated, 9-0.
7:12, time for WJR's Business Beat, brought to you by shelving.com. We rack your world. Here's Jeff Sloan, the founder and CEO of Startup Nation, to spotlight the entrepreneurial tech and startup community on WJR.
Good morning. Has anybody done any of your holiday shopping on social media shops this year? Well, somebody's been doing a lot of buying on those platforms. Last year, sales totaled $100 million in Black Friday sales in the U.S. And this year, well, the TikTok shop alone has sold $19 billion in global sales this last quarter. To put that massive number into context, the TikTok shop's sales were almost the same size as legacy e-commerce platform eBay, which brought in $20.1 billion in Q3 of last year. That, according to analytics firm Ecotix Estimates. Look, it just makes so much sense, doesn't it? I mean, you have the power of influencers and creators on these social media platforms hawking everything as you're innocently doom-scrolling, and bam, that TikTok shop is right there and at the ready to fulfill any interest you may have in those items you discovered on these social media platforms. And remember, the power of influencers and creators today is now proven to be traditional advertising messaging and calls to action in driving sales, particularly those from Gen Z shoppers. So it's no surprise these days that social media platform shops are selling so effectively. How and why are these social media platforms now doing so well at executing purchases? Well, ahead of this year's holiday season, TikTok, for example, introduced strategic updates for shop vendors and advertisers, including fully automated campaign creation and selling options, an expanded suite of smart generative creative tools, and a bulletin board, a public broadcasting tool for creators and brands to learn what's working and what's not, and post opportunities as well. The company also offered sellers and brands incentives to earn bonuses based on specific sales and targeting goals over the holiday season. So look, there you have it. There's no question that social media now is a direct part of not only the discovery aspect of retail, but the purchase execution side as well. I'm Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of StartupNation.com, the source for everything you need to start and grow your own business. And that's today's Business Beat on the great voice of the Great Lakes, WJR.
Welcome back to JR Morning. For years, nearly $830,000 restitution order tied to Detroit's public corruption case has remained one of the most lingering and costly legacies of the Kilpatrick administration. This week, new life was breathed into that controversy when federal court filings revealed that former Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick is asking Judge Nancy Edmonds to terminate the restitution order altogether. He argues he doesn't owe the money, and calling the government's ongoing efforts to recover it a continuing burden. And joining us now to talk about this latest legal move and where he believes the case stands today is our former Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick. Kwame, good morning.
Good morning, Lloyd. How you doing, man?
I am doing well. You filed once again to end this restitution, $830,000 restitution. You know, why do you believe you no longer owe this money?
Well, first of all, this is some of the confusion. This has nothing to do with this $830,000 restitution. That was tied to a text message case that was long before anything that had to do with the federal government. Okay. And so that was such a that was an arbitrary figure just put in there to, I guess, you know, because of the shock and awe of the whole thing when that happened. So that's a separate issue altogether. That's not even that issue right now. The issue is what happened in the federal case. During the federal case, that 6-month trial, they came and said the federal government said that this is a $9.6 million case. We fought that figure. I was finally found guilty. The arbitrary number that was put in was 4.7. It's not tied to any documentation. It's not tied to any bill. It's not tied to any charge. It's just a number that was held by the federal government to be restitution in this case. When I got to prison, I filed an appeal on that number. The appellate court, Sixth Circuit, set it to zero and said we're going to send it back to the trial court for them to assign a real number, what they ascertain as the loss in this case.
Okay.
Well, they arbitrarily put $1.5 million in that place, didn't tie to any figure, and they said this $1.5 million is tied to one contract that Bobby Ferguson was a subcontractor on, and the city paid water department paid $1.5 million more because an intricate scheme was used to put Bobby Ferguson on this contract. Okay, the 1.5, when we got back, the judge said at that time in 2017 that whatever money is collected or forfeited from Bobby Ferguson will be applied to this restitution jointly and severally. So whatever they got from Bobby Ferguson's forfeiture action, which I didn't have a forfeiture action. So this restitution was not Kwame Kilpatrick's restitution. I don't have any embezzlement charges. I don't have any misuse of public fund charges. So it's a lot of misinformation about what this is. Mm-hmm. So when they applied the forfeiture funds, they finally liquidated the assets that they, I believe, wrongfully and just wickedly took from Bobby. They applied it to his restitution, which is about $6 million. Mine was about still at that 1.5. They applied $3.6 million to his restitution and brought it down to $2 million. And they applied only 1.5 to mine, a little under. And they brought mine down to $164,000, plus the cash payments that I'd already been making into. What I'm saying is simply apply what the judge's order was. The judge's order was to apply the full amount of liquidated assets to us joint and severally. And there's no excuse or reason why that wasn't done. And so I'm just simply saying, let's turn the page in this case. This is an arbitrary figure. It's not tied to a single document. There's absolutely not a single bit of research or paperwork that says that something happened in this case that was $1.5 million more that the city had to pay. And let's just get rid of this. And so that's what it is. Just asking the court, really asking Judge Edmonds to do what she said, according to the order that she had in September 2017, to apply liquidated assets, to apply any cash payments to both of their restitution, joint and severally, so we can, and mine would be absolutely done. It would be over. And so it's down, the restitution, I see all these articles about millions and millions and millions. The restitution now is under $155,000, the outstanding balance from that 1.5, and I'm saying apply the rest. 3.6 was liquidated. Just apply the 3.6 million to the 155,000, and I'm done.
So you're saying that the liquidated assets all total more than the outstanding restitution. So you just want this off the books. Why? What is this burden on your life?
You know, it's an article. Like, it's an article every 6-7 months. I apply for theological school, and it says federal government is investigating Kilpatrick or his friends or something just happened. And so the school was like, no, you can't come. I had an opportunity to go on an incredible national board. And another article came. And, you know, I always let them know that I'm not under any federal investigation. I'm not on any paper from the federal government. I can show all of that information. But it's just a conversation about this money, and it's always a bad conversation because it's just so much misinformation. You know, people think it's tied to stolen money, or it's tied to misuse of public funds, or it's tied to some shady. I was convicted, charged, did the time that I did, and came out, and I made a life for myself. And you know, I don't get in trouble now. That's not what I do. I'm not involved in politics, and it's part of the continuing kind of notch, baby. To all of that, you know, horror that from me and my family, that it's time to move forward, and they know it. And so that's what I'm just saying. Let's just all move forward from this.
So what does that look like then? If you move forward, you talked about what you want to do in the faith community. Have you ever had any desire to run for Senate, to run for Congress? Have you had any aspirations to be in that public eye again?
Absolutely not. And, you know, everybody always says that I should give a political answer to that. So let me give one. No, I haven't. I don't. I don't know whether it's just been taken out of me. You know, when I was a kid and I got a whooping, I didn't do that thing again. This was a major whooping, you know. This hurt. And so I just don't have the aspirations to be in public office, but I do want to expand the ministry. I do want to work to continue to help guys and men and women get out of prison and get a second chance at life, going in and out of D.C. to help that. I do want to set up a nonprofit to help in the community in some way. in the city of Detroit, city of Atlanta and Dallas. And so there are some things that we're already doing. I just would like to do it on a more profound level. And so, you know, to be able to build that trust again in the financial community and in all the different communities that we're working in, I just need this to move forward.
Kwame Kilpatrick, appreciate you coming on with us and explaining your side of the story. We'll keep in touch. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks a lot, you all.
All right. Happy holidays to you. I'm sure that's what he was going to say. Coming up, JR Morning continues. Your chance, too, to win some tickets.
Make sure you're listening at all times on any device. Alexa, Google, whatever it is. You can download our free WJR app. Go to WJR.com. It's all there for you. And if you need to know if your kid's school is closed, it's on the website, WJR.com. You can check things out there.
Yep.
Also, make sure you're listening at 8:35. We've got an opportunity for you to win tickets to The Sound of Music coming to the Fox Theater March 5th through the 8th. An absolute classic. So make sure you are listening. This is interesting. The United States, according to reports, Customs and Border Protection, considering a new plan that would require all tourists to undergo social media screening before entering the United States. Foreign tourists would need to provide their social media activity from the last 5 years, along with personal details like email addresses, phone numbers, family members' information. There would be biometric data that would be collected, like face scans, selfies, fingerprints, DNA, and iris scans. And there have been instances of people being denied entry into the United States because of social media posts. There was one in, it's like a scientist from Europe, France, Great Britain, something like that, that were critical of Donald Trump and potentially made some sort of threats on social media, so they weren't allowed into the United States. But this is another step of, I guess, vetting people when they're coming into the United States, but it's generally a different process if you're coming here on a visa, if you're staying long-term, as opposed to, you know, coming in for a week or 2 weeks on a vacation.
Is this a mandate?
Not yet. This is something that they're considering.
Think about all of the work this would take to do. Every tourist coming here, who's going to do that work?
AI?
Yeah, you're right. That could,
happen.
Be faster than a human being. Sure.
You would need to use some sort of program to be able to scan through 5 years of social media posts? You know, if you're elderly and you post once a year, well, that'll be much easier.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're, you know, an average social media user, you'll have thousands and thousands of posts over the span of 5 years. So, they'll put in buzzwords, and if they get a hit, that would be my guess.
It's too subjective. What's the buzzword?
Right.
Says who?
Right.
What's bad? What's good?
Yeah, and again, how does that impact? Again, we're talking about the economy. It's the economy, stupid, right? How does that impact things? But that's something that CBP is proposing and considering. I like the idea on its face, right? I mean, you potentially keep bad actors out, but to your point, it feels subjective. It feels it doesn't feel bulletproof. Doesn't feel like you're really stopping somebody who wants to carry something out.
It doesn't feel all that American to me. I mean, just because you wrote something on social media that someone doesn't like, you're not going to be able to visit here. Threats are a different story, and
that's
I would assume the FBI is doing that work anyway.
Exactly. Sure. Right.
Yeah.
Two men who posed as DTE workers to enter a Rochester Hills home has been sentenced to life in prison without parole for murdering 72-year-old Hussein Murray. Now, a jury convicted Carlos Hernandez and Joshua Zuazo of first-degree murder and unlawful imprisonment for the October 2024 killing. And prosecutors say the men returned to Murray's home after pretending to check a gas leak, then attacked the couple in the basement, killing Hussein and binding his wife, Linda, before stealing cash and jewelry. Hernandez and Zuazo declined to speak at sentencing as they prepared to appeal, but Murray's sons delivered emotional statements describing the lasting pain of their father's loss, and Judge Yasmin Poles condemned the men's actions as depravity driven by greed, adding she hoped Murray's final moments would haunt him. Both men also received up to 80 years for the unlawful imprisonment charges. So they're going to be in forever. And these guys were posing as DTE workers, and DTE has come out and said, listen, you know, make sure that, you know, these guys have badges, because our workers have badges, then make them show your badges if you're just unsure.
But this, I remember this crime. It was heinous for these guys to do this, and they were just really brazen about it. And now they're going to spend the rest of their lives in jail.
Hmm.
Good. We talked about the second phase of this peace deal with Israel and Hamas and sort of what happens next for Gaza. The amount of rubble that is in the Gaza Strip and how they clean this up and make this livable for people. There have been more than 123,000 buildings in the Gaza Strip destroyed, 75,000 damaged to varying degrees. So 81% of all the structures there are either destroyed or damaged, or, you know, how can people live there? In the Wall Street Journal, they have 68 million tons of debris in Gaza, is equivalent to what? 162 Golden Gate Bridges, 186 Empire State Buildings. That's how much debris is there that they people have to work to get out to make it livable. And I just heard a story that a big storm is coming.
Mm-hmm.
It's in Greece right now and coming through to that part of the world.
Yep.
All of these people who are living in tents right now will be vulnerable to flooding, to a lot of things.
I mean, it's going to take a long time.
It's going to take a long time.
It's going to take a long time to rebuild.
And that was always the question of like, okay, well, then who's going to go
who's
in there and help?
Yeah.
Right? Where's the money come from? And mm-hmm. and those questions linger. But that's a lot that they have
this
to go through.
This requires like heavy machinery
yes.
to go
oh,
figure
yes.
this out.
Yeah, certainly. The Republicans unveiled their health care plan yesterday. You know, whether or not they were going to tackle these subsidies that the ACA, so many people need for their ACA coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the Republican plan. We'll get to the Democrat plan and we'll talk about it.
Okay.
Republican plan is not extending the subsidies of the ACA,
mm-hmm.
but instead, individuals earning less than 700% of the federal poverty level would receive $1,000 in HSA funding between the ages of 18 and 49, and $1,500 for those ages 50 to 64. That would cover the insurance. They would say it would lower premiums by 2027 by 11%. By funding cost-sharing reductions, and Americans can choose their insurance plan that, quote, fits their needs. So that's the Republican plan.
Okay.
The Democrat plan is very simple. They just want to extend the ACA tax credits for 3 more years. That's their plan.
I was listening to Fetterman yesterday, and he was saying, let's extend it for a year. It gives them a year in earnest to work on a plan that works for everybody, and that's what he was touting yesterday. Not the 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
I agree.
Works.
3 years is a little long out. You know.
Well, and how does that 3 years match up? Right to the end of Donald Trump's term.
Oh, yeah. Right. Exactly.
So banking on the fact that maybe Democrats can win back the White House and they'll deal with it then.
Mm-hmm.
But this is right at the end of Donald Trump's term.
They're supposed to leave next week for Christmas.
Yep.
Yes, that's right.
Is anything going to get done here?
I don't know, because it doesn't seem like there's 60 votes in the Senate for either of these bills.
Right.
So there's that.
And they're saying these are really just show votes, that they know none of this is going to pass, but you want to see people on record voting.
Coming up at 7:49, the Michigan Senate approved a bill Tuesday that would double the amount of tax withholding that state officials can allow developers to use for projects. We'll talk about that on the other side.
When the holidays arrive, your home works overtime, from big family dinners to out-of-town guests. And the last thing you need, is a plumbing problem slowing the celebration. That's why Shelby Mechanical is my preferred plumber for the holiday season and trusted by WJR's Inside Outside Guides. For decades, families have trusted Shelby Mechanical for reliable, honest, and fast plumbing service, the kind you need when every moment matters. And to make your holidays even brighter, they're offering a special seasonal savings. $150 off sewer repair, $50 off snake or camera service, $25 off any faucet install. Whether it's a clogged drain, sewer issue, or faucet upgrade before the guests arrive, Shelby Mechanical has you covered. So keep your home comfortable, your gathering stress-free, and your plumbing in perfect order. Call Shelby Mechanical, the plumbers you can count on this holiday season and all year long.
Time for this week's S&P Global Mobility Minute with Kent Chu.
There were just over 3 million units of new vehicle inventory listed for sale in the United States as of October 2025, according to the latest S&P Global Mobility retail advertised inventory data. This marks a small decline of 0.4% compared to October 2024. As expected, EV inventory increased 14% from the prior month as the federal tax credits concluded. There were over 104,000 EVs listed for sale at the end of October. Overall advertised EV discounts increased 6% in October as brands employed different strategies to sell EVs based on their individual business situations. The average discount on new vehicles are also on the rise, increasing $221 to $3,229. End-of-year discounts are expected to increase as model year 26 inventory continues to arrive and prompts dealers and manufacturers to clear out the older model year 25 units. What's noticeable in this fluid environment is the increased pace of discounts on the newer 2026 vehicles. The average discount on a 2026 vehicle is just over $2,800, and the industry did not reach this level of discounting on 2025 vehicles until early this past spring, meaning we are several months ahead of last year's pace. I'm Kent Chu with this week's Automotive Minute from S&P Global Mobility.
So the Michigan Senate approved a bill yesterday. It would double the amount of tax withholdings that state officials can use that so developers can keep projects on track and on budget. And the one that everybody's looking at now, what's in the spotlight, is the Renaissance Center. And it would increase the total amount of taxes developers can capture through the brownfield program from the current cap of $1.6 billion to $3.5 billion. It passed the Senate, which is Democratic-controlled. Will it pass the House? Let's talk with Craig Mauger, the state politics reporter at the Detroit News. Craig, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
All right, so what does this bill try to accomplish here, and do we expect the Republicans in the House to pass it?
Yeah, so the bill's goal here is to provide a way to entice some major transformational, as the program's called, developments to occur across the state. This program's existed for about 8 years. You've got the Hudson skyscraper. That's an example of the type of projects that have benefited from this in the past. A lot of the stuff, development that's happened along the river in Grand Rapids, that's used this program before. The lawmakers are trying to bolster the amount of resources that can be dedicated to this, you know, in anticipation of a bunch of additional projects in the pipeline, including the redevelopment of the Renaissance Center there in Detroit. Will Republicans approve what Democrats approved yesterday? Great question. A lot of lawmakers expect them to do something. The question with everything right now in Lansing is, can they come to an agreement on what this program looks like? I mean, I think a lot of legislators feel like they've got to do something to help these projects, but you know, what are those details? How do you do it? The Democrats in the Senate have attached some things to this program that would direct funding that is created through these developments to housing and child care programs. You know, maybe the Republicans in the House want to direct that funding somewhere else. Who knows? We'll see.
Well, we got about, 2 weeks left in the 2025 session. Yeah. Why is this happening now, Craig? Is this what's driving the urgency?
Yes, that's a good detail to bring up here. Governor Whitmer, Speaker Matt Hall is a Republican. Whitmer is a Democrat. Senate Majority Leader Winnie Brinks, who's a Democrat, they made a deal when they did the budget. You remember, we had this budget standoff. They had to figure out how to set a budget for this year, keep the government open. That deal included a lot of things: getting the budget done, doing some transparency about earmarks, and doing something on economic development. They haven't fully disclosed what they agreed to do on economic development, but they've all said, hey, we have this deal that we're going to do something on economic development. You can kind of guess that maybe this is one of the things that they had agreed to get done. Some people have said that deal was to get it done by the end of the year. Now we're sitting here mid-December, Christmas nearing. They don't have many session days left. The Senate might only have one more session day. They're not going to be in session today in the Michigan Senate. The House will be there. And they're kind of racing to try to get this done. That's probably why the Senate voted on this bill yesterday, because we have this thing in the legislature called a five-day rule. A bill that starts in one chamber of the legislature has to sit for 5 days in the other chamber before they can vote on it. So if you play that out, maybe next week the House votes on this before the legislature finishes its work for the year.
We've been hearing the narrative from Matt Hall and those in the House, like we're ending handouts to corporations. How would this be different then, and why might they support it?
There was a program that the state was using to spur developments called Strategic Outreach and Attraction Reserve Fund, and that was called SOAR. Many people knew that as SOAR. That gave companies basically cash incentives to do projects, money up front. Here's money to get the site ready. Here's money for this project that you say you're going to do, General Motors, Ford, to bring all these jobs here. There were a number of projects that did not deliver on the promises that they were making at press conferences when the governor appeared with them to announce these projects. So there was a lot of frustration with that cash incentive approach. This program and some other things that the legislature is looking at is different because the transformational brownfield does not provide the money up front. Basically, what developers get is a portion of the tax revenue that they generate through the new jobs, the new sales tax, the development on their property. So if you're looking at the Renaissance Center, you know, if they put a lot of money into the construction, if they are bringing in workers there, they would get to keep maybe a portion of the sales tax, maybe a portion of the income tax that's generated there, maybe a portion of the personal property tax on the equipment that is going to be brought there. These are all options that the state officials can negotiate with the developers to allow them to keep a portion of.
Interesting stuff. We know you'll keep an eye on it. So will we. Craig Mauger, appreciate the time as always. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you got it. You know, Joe Bellino, the senator down in Monroe, talked about this program. You know, millionaires and billionaires are working on these projects. Mm-hmm. Why are you asking lawmakers and taxpayers for financial relief? Which is a fair question. And there's kind of always two ways to look at it, right? Does that bring more development into your town? Does it bring more development into your state if you have these incentives? Or do you not want to do that and hope that they come anyway? It's tough.
It's a catch in there.
It does seem, though, that there does seem to be like a community then investment into it a little bit.
Well, billionaires redeveloped downtown Detroit, and we all like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. And then what other economic benefits do you gain from that? Right. You're talking about people now wanting to treat Detroit like a vacation destination.
Yeah.
Right. You want to come here, eat the food, see the sights, uh-huh. and hopefully you bring in
and
more money. That way. That's right. All right. We'll take a break. 8 o'clock hour coming up. It's JR Morning. 8 o'clock hour. It's good to have you. Still some slippery conditions out there, so be careful. Lots of schools off today. As dealing with snow, you know what's interesting is like the first snow this year, everything stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Like we haven't gotten rid of it yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's been so cold.
It's been cold.
Yeah.
Feels like usually you get the snow and then it goes away. You get a light dusting and it goes away.
I don't think it was you mean this week first snow? We had snow before that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it hasn't gone away. It's stuck around because it's been so cold. It hasn't melted away. So we're just,
Wait, Paul Gross over there?
No, God, no. You see, this front moves in. It's been so cold, snowed, and it hasn't gone away.
And go to WJR.com for all the school closings. They're all right there. I think every school is closed, but if you just want to check and see if your school is closed, WJR.com.
I always hated being the one school that was open. You're like, everybody around us is closed.
Yeah.
Why aren't you closed? Why do I have to come in? You know, I have a math test today that I had not prepared for.
Right.
You could have just called school today, in which I also didn't prepare for the math test. I didn't. It was no.
Especially if it was snowing and you knew the snow was coming and stuff. You just didn't probably look at it. I'll study it.
1,000%.
Yeah.
1,000%.
I know we're going to have a snow day, so I just won't study.
And then you get up and you're like, no.
Snow days were the best. You got to stay home, have different snacks, watch Jerry Springer.
Oh, God.
Oh, that was part of it? Okay.
Price is Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Family Feud.
Sure. Woo-hoo. Yeah. Going out in the snow is great. Great times. Now the kids are just like.
They're on their phones.
It's cold. And
playing the games.
I want to go in the snow. And I'm like, what are you? I'm going to throw snow in your face is what I'm going to take snow from outside, bring it in, and put it in your shirt.
They don't want
get
snow
outside.
Angels? They don't want to do snow angels?
They're very finicky. They're just like, okay. I don't want to do this. It's nice in here. And right, I can have goldfish. Why are we going outside? There's nothing out there for me. Donald Trump was in Pennsylvania yesterday talking about affordability and the concerns that people are still paying too much. And he talked about the job creation, particularly in this 90-minute long rally that he is has coined, really, particularly in Pennsylvania, saying that there's been a lot of job creation there.
Since my inauguration, we've created nearly 60,000 new Pennsylvania jobs, including 4,000 Pennsylvania manufacturing jobs that the Democrats gave up on.
Well, and again, like, the job numbers are, they're underwhelming. Even when they beat expectations, they're still a bit underwhelming.
Yeah, and to your point, the American people want to hear what you're doing to lower prices, not saying that it's a hoax.
Yeah, because when I go to the grocery store, I'm still paying a lot of money. And on my kitchen table, it's still, you know, we're still paying a lot.
And I would almost prefer, instead of saying it's a hoax, be like, we're going to beat them on this. Like, and come out and say it. Look, we understand that the Democrats are all of a sudden interested in affordability, where they hadn't been the last 4 years. We're gonna make sure that we do a better job at them, at making things more affordable for you. But that kind of candor doesn't exist in D.C. It doesn't exist in any party. But that's what I would like to see. I'd like to see accountability. Nope, this didn't work. We're going to change things around to make sure that you actually are feeling it. Because the economic numbers are what they are, but people aren't feeling it at the bottom level where we are.
Yeah. And especially at the grocery store, someone who spends a lot of money on coffee, ground coffee.
Yes.
In September, it was $9.14 a pound. I mean, I'm paying like $15 for coffee these days. It used to be $6.47 a year earlier, although the recent rollbacks on these tariffs could help there. But like those kinds of things, buying coffee. The guy from Omaha Steaks says ground beef could cost $10 a pound by next year. Those are the things that affect people.
I mean, I bought coffee, yesterday at Costco?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have a Keurig at home, so sure. I just bought the K-Cups. But it was like $45.
Yeah, for the big
for
box.
For Kirkland K-Cups.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy money. Talk about money. There is at least a plan that Republicans have rolled out to address the ACA subsidies. Democrats want to just extend the subsidies for another 3 years. Republicans want to put $1,000, depending on your age, or $1,500, depending on your age, into HSA accounts and let the American people go ahead and shop for their insurance. And he says that he likes what the Senate's doing.
I like the concept. I don't want to give the insurance companies any money. They've been ripping off the public for years. Obamacare is a scam to make the insurance company rich.
They don't have the 60 votes for either plan.
$1,500 doesn't sound like enough in the health savings account when you think about it.
Right.
So at least they're talking about it, but I don't know what's going to get done here the week and a half before they leave for Christmas.
And what did John Fetterman say? What's his proposal?
Yesterday he was touting extending the ACA as is for 1 year, giving everyone more time to discuss a better plan.
Fine, do that. And then in a year when you don't have a better plan, we do it again.
Federal prosecutors are expected to file criminal charges soon in a high-profile computer hacking case targeting the creator of a popular stalkerware application. Federal court records unsealed in Detroit revealed a 4-year undercover investigation against Brian Fleming. He is the founder of the surveillance app PC Tattletale. Agents from Homeland Security investigations allege Fleming's app allowed its 138,000 customers to remotely and covertly spy on victims' cell phones and computers. The case is rare, involving undercover agents posing as customers and marketers in a spy versus spy probe stretching from San Diego to Fleming's Bruce Township mansion. Court documents list probable cause for conspiracy and computer hacking, citing incriminating emails where customers described using the app to spy on intimate partners, often with Fleming's assistance. Fleming's attorney saying that the founder genuinely had no idea that the product was violating any laws, but noted they have now negotiated a resolution to the case, suggesting that a plea deal could be imminent. The case highlights this growing use and illegal sale of stalkerware apps that allow users to monitor text, calls, and even turn on a victim's camera and microphone without consent. I mean, people can just tap into your phone like that. And some people
that feels
upset.
Illegal. Feels like a law is being broken.
Some people were really upset with Mr. Fleming when the app wasn't working right, and like you should see some of the things they say. Like, I need to know what he's doing now because he's probably out with his woman. But
oh boy,
used another word.
Oh boy.
This might, we may not have enough time to get truly into it, but this idea of this woman who posed as an heiress, she's allegedly from Michigan and defrauded nearly $30 million from banks and institutions. It's according to the FBI.
An heiress from where?
She's
don't worry about that. Those are details you don't need to concern yourself with. She's an heiress, Lloyd.
Okay, my bad.
People believed her that she was. She's 73 years old. She's on the run after posing as an heiress and scamming nearly $30 million from the banks. Her name is Mary Carol McDonnell, and she's wanted for alleged involvement in this fraud scheme in Los Angeles and Orange County over in California. She posed as an heir to the McDonnell aircraft family and falsely claimed to have access to an $80 million secret trust. The McDonnell Aircraft Corporation no longer exists. So, come on, people. You ask one follow-up question or look into it.
Yeah. It's like, did you check to see? It doesn't even exist. She's the heiress to nothing.
That's wild.
Like Seinfeld, the heiress to the candy bar.
Oh, my God. Well, then you know what? It's these banks' fault. Oh, ask the question. God. Oh, well, really, what does the McDonald's Air Company do?
Yeah. I mean, how do you, you go?
Oh, you can't answer that?
Yeah.
You go in with a bunch of jewels on and you just, you know, with a nice dress.
We can get into this true crime thing a little later on.
Yeah.
All right, we'll take a break. Coming up on the other side, tickets to The Sound of Music to give away. Also, Lou Whitaker in the Hall of Fame. We'll talk to Lynn Henning next on JR Morning.
You know what would be a great Christmas present? If Lou Whitaker finally made it to the Hall of Fame. That's what Tigers fans want. It's what the numbers show that he should be there. And this has been a discussion this week because Jeff Kent was elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame on the Contemporary Era ballot. But when you look at the comparisons, Lou Whitaker has better numbers. Let's talk to Lynn Henning, sports writer at the Detroit News. Lynn, how are you?
Well, very fine, Jamie. Nice to hear from you and Chris and Lloyd this morning.
Perfect. So let's just get into it a little bit here because social media was a buzz. When it just comes to the war stat, Whitaker is better than Jeff Kent.
Well, Whitaker is better than about 20 guys who are already second baseman in the Hall of Fame. And I shouldn't say 20. There's about 20 in there. And Whitaker's really by numbers, Jamie, he's 13th by any set of metrics that you want to apply. And yet all these other guys are in. And he's nowhere to be seen yet. And yeah, he is better than Jeff Kent, but he's been better than a lot of the people that have been placed in there. And it's left everybody just a little bit, disgusted, but also I think just simply mystified. Mm-hmm. And it's been like this now for 25 years. I went through it in a big piece a couple of weeks ago, and it's a long historical explanation. It's really not malignant, but really what it gets down to, folks, is that he's had a hard problem moving voters, whether it was 25 years ago with the writers, or more really mysteriously now, he can't seem to get the ex-players, the ex-front office people, and so forth, also to sanction him with a plaque. It just leaves everybody a little bewildered.
Lynn, I mean, you covered Whitaker's entire arc. I mean, did his quiet, like kind of understated persona actually work against him with voters who tend to kind of gravitate towards those flashier, more visible stars?
I think that is a little bit to explain it, Lloyd. And particularly, you have to remember, he played during the pre-cable TV era. And there was no internet back then. And all of those things really more explain it. His numbers didn't seem to crystallize more until really later on when the internet crowd and the sabermetrics people began looking at him. And I can give you one example there. OPS, it's your on-base percentage plus your slugging, and it's really considered to be the most distilled measure of a player's effectiveness. His OPS, when 800 is really something up there in all-star land, in his last 5 years was between 800 and 900. Well, if you were looking at those numbers, let's say before the internet crowd really made them clear, there's no question he would have been a slam dunk. Mm-hmm. But that's an example of how he's fallen through the cracks. But where it really mystifies me, it just flabbergasts me that the Modern Era Committee 5 years ago, which was made up of six Hall of Famers whom he played with, as well as six front office people that knew him intimately, and four writers from that genre. He could only get 6 out of 16 votes, which tells you that even the guys that he competed against were ignoring him in ways that just don't make sense.
So you brought up an interesting point, the era in which Lou Whitaker played. Now, Tram's in, but as you get further away from that 84 team and from Lou Whitaker's tenure as a Tiger, does it make it harder to put him in, do you think, in the eyes of those voters?
The short answer on that, Chris, is they are going to put him in. The question becomes when. His next legitimate chance should come in 3 years. And that's when that modern era committee that is really designed to look at oversights convenes again. And he should go on the ballot. The problem is now it's getting very, very cluttered. Not only did Kent really be the only one that they rubber stamped this week, but they're going to have a whole bunch more guys from not only this list, but also the Bonzas and the Clemenses, and these guys are beginning to pile up. And so Whitaker is going to get squeezed. But what they won't be able to live with is the fact that his numbers are simply so stark and so demanding of really acknowledgement when so many guys are already in, as we said, at that position. It just has made no sense. And ultimately, justice is going to be served. I just hope it's while he's still with us and not afterward.
Same. We all think that. Just quickly, briefly, what do you think about Tarek Skubal coming into this final year? Are the Tigers going to give him the biggest deal ever?
The rumors are swirling online.
Yes.
Yeah. The problem is this, folks. Anything that the Tigers would offer him right now would simply be viewed as the ground floor for the auction bidding next autumn. So Scott Boras, his agent, and Tarek Skubal are not going to sign an extension. They are going to go to free agency, at which point the Tigers are free to compete for 10 years and $400 million, if that makes sense for a guy who's about to turn 30.
So then it makes more sense to deal him?
Well, I think it makes more sense to pitch him next year, exploit him, because you've probably got a good playoff team brewing here again in Detroit. And then he doesn't walk away scot-free. You get a first-round draft pick equivalent as compensation in 2027. So that's not a bad farewell parting there.
All right. Lynn Henning with all the Tigers news for us. We appreciate it.
Okay, Bethann. Thanks. See, Kurt, or Jamie, excuse me. Thank you.
That's okay. All right, so, you know, hopefully Lou gets into the hall and the Tigers get what they need out of Tarek Skubal.
It is the thing that I do. I hate to see it. And look, Lou Whitaker is 68, okay? Well, we hope he's with us for another 68.
Yeah.
But I don't like doing this with these older players that, you know, age is undefeated. And you just don't live forever. And so you want Lou Whitaker to be able to celebrate that.
Absolutely. I mean, is Lou like one of the best players not in the hall?
Well, I mean every town has someone that they can make an argument for, but our town
here, yes. I mean, Lou should be in.
Yeah.
Lou should be in. Lou Whitaker should be in the Hall of Fame.
The war is, he's 75.1 career, and this Jeff Kent, who just got in, is 55.4. And a lot of people put a lot of oomph on war.
Well, nowadays, for sure, in this analytical age. Mm-hmm. It is nice around this time of year. You know, you got a guy like Tarek Skubal, who is obviously the best pitcher in baseball, back-to-back Cy Young seasons. And then the questions about what they do with him. Because it will put them in a predicament if they are a good team again.
Yeah.
And they're going to make a deep push. And you get to the deadline, what do you do? It's tough.
Yeah.
All right, we'll take a break. Coming up on the other side, we've got an opportunity for you to win Sound of Music tickets. They are coming to the Fox Theater March 5th. Also, today being Wednesday, we've got Name That Tune. We'll play that at 8:49. Still a lot to do. Don't go anywhere. It's JR Morning.
Right now, drilling more oil than we've ever done ever before. Prices are way down. We just had four states. It was just reported that four states had $1.99 a gallon.
That's Donald Trump yesterday speaking in the Poconos at a rally talking about affordability, saying that Pennsylvania in particular is prospering again, America winning again. He talked about lower unemployment rates. He talked about a decline in gas prices. He talked about what the United States is doing for the agriculture industry, for farmers, all while just a couple of days ago talking about the affordability issue being a Democratic hoax. And it's to me, it's not a hoax. It's what people are feeling.
Absolutely.
People are still paying too much.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say that gas prices are down, or you can say that inflation is coming down, which it is.
It is.
It's lower than the, you know, 9% it spiked to. Certainly, it's not down to 2% like you want it,
mm-mm,
but they're working on that. So as a result, it's not what people are feeling.
Well, yeah, and you can make a lot of arguments about manufacturing and job creation, things like that, but it muddies the water when you say things like inflation is down, because it's the same as it was last year. Mm-hmm. We're hovering at 3%.
Mm-hmm.
And numbers don't lie. Economists are talking about the numbers of prices going up. So to your point, acknowledging that prices have not come down yet, but you're working on it, to me is a better message than, oh, everything's fine.
No, because, you know, if I'm at my kitchen table trying to figure out how I'm going to pay for this or that, you know, and my grocery bill is high, you know, what you're saying, telling me, means nothing.
Right. And you could turn it into a political issue. You can go, hey, guys, for 4 years, they didn't care about affordability.
Oh, right.
For 4 years, they were more worried about what to call people and the proper identification for people.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we were working on. And we continue to work. That's how you could frame it if you want to go the political route.
Yeah.
Or you could just go, hey, you know what? We were trying a couple things.
Yep.
We were throwing things against the wall to see what sticks. These couple things didn't, so we're gonna readjust.
We're gonna evaluate,
and we're gonna change things around to make sure that what money you got in your bank account, what money you got in your pocketbook, is something that you can keep and stretch further.
Yeah.
Right.
It's very
simple. Denying that prices are, you know, high is not the way to go. Just assuming it'll get better, not the way to go. You have to talk about it so people can hear you.
But that's just not the way things work. It's just not the way things work in D.C.
Uh-uh. That makes
it's either
sense.
Somebody else's fault,
mm-hmm,
or if you do something good, obviously it's what you've done. And that's not just Donald Trump. That's everybody.
Oh, yeah.
That is Congress. That's the Senate. It is everybody in that town.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes people, it adds to the distrust from the American people. Because you're telling me something that I'm not feeling. So are you lying to me? Are you just ignorant? Or do you not know what you're talking? Like, what is it? Because those questions then lead to the favorability ratings.
Yeah.
It leads to how people look at you as a candidate or your party as a candidate. So to me, there is a very simple way to go about this, and they choose not to do that.
But yeah, but then you have some people who say, well, you know, maybe it's just me who's catching it. Maybe everybody else is doing well because they say everybody's doing well. So maybe it's just me.
Yeah, I suppose some people do feel like they're
you
in
know?
A silo.
Exactly. You know, but.
Meanwhile, the Republicans in the Senate have released this health care plan. These subsidies with the ACA, and people are paying more for their health insurance. Well, Republicans in the Senate have come out and said, look, we're going to put $1,000 into HSA accounts for those between 18 and 49. $1,500 for those 50 to 64. A little extra money, a little older, you might need a little extra health care, right?
Mm-hmm.
They also say that by 2027, premiums will be down by 11%. Nothing to sneeze at.
No.
But it's a good number, 11%. But the Democrats on the opposite side are saying, we just want to extend the ACA subsidies for another 3 years. So we'll continue to provide these subsidies until the end of the Trump administration, at which point we will evaluate then. Problem is, Donald Trump says he likes the Republican health care plan.
I like the concept. I don't want to give the insurance companies any money. They've been ripping off the public for years. Obamacare is a scam to make the insurance company rich.
Neither side has 60 votes, though. They would need the supermajority. They don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it was like sort of hastily rolled out. To Fetterman's point, Senator Fetterman, who I listened to yesterday, why not extend the ACA, which is about to increase for people like 26%, for a year? Give those lawmakers a year to come up with this plan. If you want to do health savings account, fine. But talk about it more, because there is a week and a half before the Christmas holiday.
Yeah, I don't know how this gets done.
Oh.
Democrats, I mean, look, I didn't think that they would cave on the shutdown the way that they did.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a death nail if they go, we'll sign this instead. Like, that to me is a non-starter.
I don't see that happen.
No. Democrats will not do it. And I don't think Republicans can back away from it. This is the problem with this ideology.
Yeah.
Of, well, we don't work together on things. So you stay on your, it's like a, you know, a middle school dance. The boys are on one side, the girls are on another. Nobody's coming. Everybody's nervous. Nobody wants to come together at a dance.
Yeah.
That's what this is. Nobody wants to come together to collaborate. Well, listen, everybody's on different sides of the room.
Well, and but both sides, this affects both sides of the aisle. This is not just one, you know, a Democrat or Republican. Republicans and Democrats have this insurance, and their premiums are going to go up, and they're going to be catching it. So both sides need to do something, because I'm sure their constituents are saying, you got to do something.
Sure.
Or you do nothing and let the premiums go up, and some people lose the benefit entirely, which is a choice you can make. It was supposed to, it was a sunset of this, you know, after COVID. But I think politically that may not work out.
I don't know. I agree. It doesn't work because that's not, it didn't matter why they were put in place. People were getting the subsidies.
Right.
It's why you put, when these programs go into effect, it's so hard to take it away.
Right.
It's why when the ACA got put into place, Republicans for years wanted to do away with it after the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, this isn't even affordable. It's not even, doesn't even meet the threshold of the name. It's not affordable. And yet, do you know how difficult it is to sell to the American people who are on this that now we're taking it away?
Yeah.
That's why these social programs are so difficult to do away with.
Horse out the barn already.
Yeah.
And what would it cost? According to the Congressional Budget Office analysis, if you extended this for 3 more years, it would cost $90 billion. That's a lot.
Wow.
All right, need you to be caller number 9 at 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. Up for grabs are a pair of tickets to opening night at Rodgers and Hammerstein's The Sound of Music at the Fox Theater, directed by 3-time Tony Award winner Jack O'Brien. A vibrant and romantic tale of Maria and the Von Trapp family will captivate you with its universal themes of love, resilience, and the power of music. Playing at the Fox Theater March 6th through the 8th. And for a bonus chance to win, you can text keyword Maria to 800-859-0957. Official rules are at WJR.com. Tickets are also on sale at Ticketmaster. We're playing Name That Tune next here on JR Morning. All right, it is Wednesday, 8:49. Means it's time for Name That Tune, and we've got more prizes to give away. So if you want to play along with us, 800-859-0957, line up. And we've got tickets to Aurora Winter Wizards, which is over at Glenmore Trails. Great spot for kids if you want to walk through the woods. They light everything up, interactive displays, things like that. It's a great time of year over at Glenmore Trails. So we have that for you if you want to play along. All right, so here's the deal. Jason out, Dominic is in. Good morning, Dominic.
Good morning,
guys.
It's
nice to see you. Renee out, Rich Lozinski in. All right, here we go. Yeah.
Let's do it.
I do.
Yeah, no, this is the thing.
He likes to remind us. Okay.
Rich is going to dominate. There is no question about this. All right, so Dominic, what is our theme today? What do we got?
Well, so I grew up in the 90s, right? And so as a result, I have a huge amount of love for the sitcoms that came out around that time. So we are doing 90s sitcom theme songs today.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Like that. Where do you want to start?
Let's start. Jamie, I've got one for you. Are you ready for this?
Personally, yeah, well. Thank you. Okay.
All right. Here we go.
Saved by the Bell.
That is correct.
I might be good at this one.
Very nice. Very yeah, okay. good.
Zach
very good.
Morris
got
cell
it
phone.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
All right, well, Lloyd.
All right, let's see what we do here.
Yeah, Lloyd, here we go.
Oh, that's Seinfeld.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
That one of the greatest bass lines of all time.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I love that show still.
That show just lives on and lives, and it's so relevant. I love it. It's one of the best shows ever. All right, Richard.
All right, here we go. Oh, Wow, you guys are blowing through
these.
Oh,
my gosh.
I was going to say, like, X-Files.
Right,
that's
right,
what
exactly. Exactly.
Wow,
yes, the
Rich.
Famous 90s sitcom, The X-Files.
Well, it sounded spooky. That's where I was coming from.
Yeah. I think that was, like, the season one theme, because they changed it after a while, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Truth Time.
Yeah.
Had a big crush on Topanga.
Did you?
Yeah.
Didn't we all?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, big crush on Topanga.
All right. Well, Chris, it's your turn. You ready for this?
Nope.
All right.
Oh. Same old thing.
Oh, come on, Chris. You got this.
Oh, I'm just waiting to see if they say it. I don't know. I don't know. I know the song. I'm singing along. I don't know it.
You don't know
I can't think of it. All right, Jamie.
I don't know. I really don't.
Have no idea.
Here's a hint. It got a...
Well, don't give Rich the hint. Hold on.
Okay. Rich, give it a go.
All right.
That's a good guess.
What's the hint?
The hint, Ashton Kutcher was
that's
the lead
70s show.
That's
right.
Yeah.
That is correct.
You know, I was never really a big fan. It was never
the 70s show.
My bag, yeah.
I liked it.
It was fine.
Not like huge.
Right. All right, Jamie.
Okay.
Jamie, here we go.
Friends.
Yeah. That's a gimme.
Very good. Great show. Another great show.
Correct.
I found my wheelhouse.
Yeah, right.
Yes. Right in your spot.
Let's get Judy in Redford in the mix. Judy, good morning.
Good morning.
All right. Are you ready? You're a big fan of 90s sitcoms.
Yeah. Well, no. Oh. I'm a favorite of Sound of Music.
Right? Oh, so
my husband
right.
may be a favorite of sitcoms. Are you, Sam?
Is he there?
Oh, he said no.
Okay. Oh, no. All right. Okay. Well, do you, you know, this? You could tag team this if you don't know it.
Okay.
All right. Hit Judy. Let's go. What do we got?
All right, here we go.
Hey, listen.
I can't hear it.
All
Does
right,
Bob
Judy.
Does Bob Saget? Is that a good hint?
What do you think it is? Oh, I'm sorry. I love the Sound of Music, but not
Bob.
Not the
Bob
other.
Saget, John Stamos,
a okay.
couple of famous twins.
Oh, we're old.
You're old. Oh. All right.
Right.
All right. Do you have another one for Judy?
Sure.
Because that is that Step by Step.
It's
that
full
was not
full
Step
house.
By Step.
Full House.
Well, that's what I meant. Full House.
It was Full House.
Full House.
Got it, dude.
Step by Step. Oh, there you go. You got it, dude. give Judy another one here.
All right, here we go. Let's try this one, Judy. Let's see if you can get this.
Oh, I've no idea.
Any idea, Judy?
No idea.
No idea.
I'm honest. I'm old.
All right.
All right, well, I've got a hint for you. Let's see if you can get it after this hint.
Can I do that?
Remember Urkel?
I'm getting older.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Judy, thank you. Good. It was good to hear from you.
Well, thank you for your time and your good station.
Well,
thank you,
Judy.
So
appreciate
much,
it.
Judy.
Lloyd?
That was Family Matters.
Yeah, Family Matters.
Family Matters.
Yeah. Great show.
Great show.
I love Family Matters.
All right, Richard. Or no, Lloyd. Let's go Lloyd here.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Oh, I already did that one. Whoops. Here we go.
Is that Roseanne?
That is Roseanne.
That is Roseanne. Well done.
That is correct.
Great. The harmonica.
Harmonica, right off the rip. Yes.
Great theme song.
That's also a good show.
It is great. I didn't
fire.
Really like the reboot, though.
No,
I didn't. Either.
I watched one or two of
them,
and I'm like, it just doesn't work. Doesn't hit the same way. All right, Richard, we have some more.
Here we go. You guys are brilliant.
Really enjoyed
another
that
good show.
That's
another
correct.
Great show.
He was like a coach in Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. What was that dude's name, Richard? The coach. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Craig Nelson. Yeah. Another fantastic show.
Yeah, I mean, the 90s were a great time.
It was.
Great time. All right, we have more?
Yeah, we got a few more.
All right, let's roll.
All right, here we go. Chris, here's one for you.
Oh, King of Queens.
That's right. Oh. Nailed it.
You got
it.
A hint in that.
Yeah, it did spark it. But that was another good show. Very funny. I gotta catch up on some of these at some point.
Yeah. They're good. They're still
I forget about still Coach. I forgot
like
about Coach.
No.
I mean, I watch Family Matters on Saturdays.
Do you still?
Absolutely.
Dude, that's a great
Saturday
show.
Saturday mornings, yeah.
Fantastic show. All right, that's going to do it for us. Have yourself a wonderful Wednesday. Take it easy on the roadway. Still a little slippery out there. And we will see you tomorrow. Mitch Albom, Say Detroit Radiothon is tomorrow. We'll be with him in the 6 o'clock hour. Kevin Eaton, I'll talk coming up next. Here.